I was still in a bit of a dizzy. You see, I had drunk a considerable amount of vodka, and not really realized what I'd done, but enough to say that when I got back with the other lads, I mentioned about being a bit of a schmozzle, as we say, and didn't want to think about it. I went into an empty house with some of the other lads and kicked on the floor. Next morning, we were given some cubes of tea, which we had to crumble and put in a can. And we got some water in a big can, started a fire from timber out of the empty houses round about, and brewed the tea. Only, there were no milk or sugar. Well, it didn't matter. The tea was small, like that's with the from the firewood, you know, on the fire line. But it was hot. Afterwards, Russians came with half a pig. Well, we tried to cook it, but there weren't any salt or anything like that. We still got it tender enough to eat, and after that we put some more water on the fire and attempted to have a bit of a wash and shave, like. We all dipped in the same tin and all. Anyway, all the lads had found an old cutthroat razor, so we found it in one of the houses, so we all had a go at this. And we all made a mess of it, like. So one of the lads, he took the razor off us and he shaved it on a leather strap. He picked it up somewhere or other, I don't know. And he sat us all down and gave us all a shave one by one. In turn. It took him quite a bit, but when he finished and he shaved himself, he mentioned that before he joined up he was an apprentice barber. So we were lucky that we were all right at all. Mind you, we were lousy, but we had to put up with it. Now, during that day, we scrounged around a bit, mingled a bit with the French, and found that they'd all had some soup somewhere. So we asked the Russians the best we could, like, for some food. We were given some more cubes of tea and a sack of bread. Now, as I mentioned about the bread, every slice was hard and dry. It was curled up. It had to be soaked, then warmed on the fire to make it soft enough to eat. But after eating it, you had to watch out. Ooh, about an hour after that or so, an hour and a half, when you relieve yourself, the light practically dumplings. Oof, terrible and stink. Well, we stayed in that town for another day. Then we're called together. Both the French and the British, and told we were going to the next district. Enough to say that when we got there, we weren't accepted. They refused to accept it, did the commander, so we had to go back until the next day. And we were rerouted. Because don't forget that the war was still on, you know, and the Russians were using this here scissor or pincer movement to advance, leaving pockets of resistance here and there. Well, you know, we were halted here and there and everywhere. Stop this, and then there'll be a hail of someone coming over, and then off again. And one particular time we stopped about 300 yards away from a copse, a small wood, if you will. It'd be about 3 acres, something like that, I should think. And we were told to lie low and wait. Well, this we did. Waited for about half an hour, which is getting a bit restless, and two Russian trucks drove. We about the Russians swat his jumped off it, and on the back of the trucks were these here racks, like, you know, slanting racks. And, slanting front back to over top of the wagon, you know. And, about 67 minutes later, we heard this little zip, you know, like the zipping. Well, I don't know, I never heard of a noise like it before. And it was the first time I'd heard and seen rockets in action. And they were devastating. Phew. There were no clocks left when we looked up. And the Russians were running towards this here place where it had been. With the guns ready, like, you know, but they waved and told us to come on, like, you know. So, as we entered the remains of this here small copse, or what did you call it? The smell of burning all around, like, and tree stumps, and one or two bodies lying about, like, but nobody seemed to bother about. So, the Russians said that the escort we had motioned us to get some broken branches and bits and pieces we could find and make a big fire and brew up. Well, there were three fires actually, because you remember this one had a lot of froggies. And so we got some together, and we got snow and piled it in the buckets, and when it melted put some snow in and more, some more and more and more and so on. And eventually we got it boiling. Oh, it took us about an hour and a half or more. But the French had done the same, and they made themselves some soup. And we made some tea, and had a good thing then. Just tea, no milk and sugar again. And tasted a bit queer, but it weren't so bad. Now, after that, we got to evening time, you know, night time again, we get into this here deserted little village again, another village, and after a while we went around these here empty places looking for shelter for ourselves, and we got a few shells thrown over at us, like, you know, so what the hell's going on here? Anyway, then we heard these here tanks running up, rolling up, like, you know, so they rolled past us along and kept going. And we heard a few more bang bangs, and after that it were quiet, and so we fell asleep with exhaustion, to be honest. After a few more skirmishes like that, like, we arrived at a good yard. At one end of a big wood nut, and there were three Russian officers there. And two of them could speak English, so of course we were interviewed again, and after that we were put into these here cattle trucks. All those British were going about, I forget, down to 20 odd in here, I think, well, okay, something like that. Otherwise, that's all they were. And of course we got a stove and a load of wood, and two bags of bread, and two buckets, and some soup powder, and some blocks of tea. Then we got a large milk kit on here, full of water, that, you know. After that we were locked in and told to rest, you know, kind of thing. I don't know what, I think that's what they meant when these, whatever they said that. And the French were treated the same way. I don't remember when we started our journey. As a matter of fact, both of them went to sleep. Although it was a hard floor, we were once again tired. We awoke when the train jolted. Now we couldn't see anything because there were no shutters or openings anywhere. Just a crack or two between the floorboards, but these we had to use for urinating. The shutters were battened, must have been from the outside, because we couldn't find any openings at all of any description. However, we We didn't bother after a while. We got on our way. We started on our way. We could feel the train rocking from side to side. We picked up speed. And we had to keep our eye on the water, you know. So it didn't spill over, anything like that. Eventually, we got that to be able to fasten it. So we fastened it, more or less, and we bit a string onto the side of the wagon. And, we got some of the wood, cleaned it off best we could, and dropped that inside the in this here milk kit. Because, you see, they acted as floaters, you know, so that when the water splashed up and down, it didn't splash out and spill out and wet everything, and I would have none left. So off we went anyway, and we settled down for a long trip because we knew that with two sacks of bread and all this, that and the other. And of course we've been going for a bit, and yeah, we lost time and lost count of the time and whether it was light or dark or anything at all. Where exactly we were heading, we had no idea. We could only guess, like, you know, just guesswork. And we were wrong in any case, it turned out. And then after a, must have been nearly a, I should say half a day or more, came a long, mournful cry, taken up by hundreds of voices. We heard this thing. Last soup, I thought, oh, no, we're off again. Last soup, you know. Oh, no, we could do about it because they're in the other trucks, you see. And suddenly, the train started to slow down. We could feel it. He stopped. Then we could feel it going backwards, slowly, you know. He stopped again. There were shells, noises, sliding doors. Then it was our turn. We didn't know how dust screwed on. Anyway, we jumped out and found ourselves in another railway siding, but have you ever noticed? They all look the same, don't they, these railway sidings? And this seemed an extra long siding, and I glanced along the train. What a great long train it was. It must have been about 50 wagons or trucks we had come in at least. Anyway, there would have to be for 2,000 fuggies, wouldn't there? But we looked down opposite way, and we saw this spectacle, which we were to see again and again. Imagine 2,000 Frenchmen with the bums stuck out over the railway line for along the track, they're relieving themselves in the rail. We had to join them, but honestly, we got behind them actually on the other track, and if you got windward of that lot, it was an experience itself. Dear me. Shocker. After that, we were allowed to walk up and down a bit to loosen our muscles a bit and one thing or another. And there was a gang of Russians there, though. They were throwing wood in the wagons, and they chucked us a bale of straw in our wagon. I thought, gee, that's happening, because we could sleep on that, you see. Mind you, we were lousy, so it didn't matter one way or the other. But I said to one to her, let's go and see if we can get some hot water in this bucket, like, you know. So we took a bucket. Went towards the engine, got the engine. And, the only words of Russian we knew was Angličana and Tavarish. Well, we tried it. We took this bucket to this here engine light, you know. And there's a Russian officer asking around there, like, just walking down. And I said, pointing to the engine, "Water, please." The officer looked at us. He knew what was it, and he laughed. And he said, "I speak a bloody good English." Then he hugged me and said, "Yeah, friendly, yeah, yeah." And he nodded. And he pulled out the inevitable bottle of vodka and gave us all a squeak. Well, there was about 8 of us round, went now, you know. He wasn't just having a stroll around and mooching now. He did taste better than what I tasted before. And he said, "Bloody good vodka, huh? Not piss."
"No, like it a pissed."
"Good vodka," I said, "good vodka." And I nodded my head and he said, "Bloody good comrade, huh?" We all, of course, wanted to know that this was getting anyway. He put his top on and put it back in his pocket, like, you know, his coat pocket. It's a long coat, I know. And boots, he had a long bloody boots on. And he got some water for us from the engineers. He had, you know, train light, got his bucket of water. And he walked back with us to our allotted truck-like, and there were a couple of froggies there, rooting about in our wagon, so we jumped in after them and thumped them, and then we searched them, like, obviously, and slung them out in the snow. And the officer said, "Bloody good, bloody good. Keep buckle." He gave us his bottle, he must have had a quarter full of smoke like that. And I said, dark, you know, can't see, dark. Ah, he pointed his finger at it. "No see, no allow, see, no. But he winked and he just pulled a thin baton off. One shutter on one side, just a thin baton. Because they were like shutters, you know, going crossways. He just whipped one up, never said it, and he walked off. Before he walked off, he kissed me on both cheeks again. And, waved his hand and strode off. Now, the escort we had started charging for us to get back into the trucks. Everybody back in the truck kind of thing. We didn't understand what they were saying, but we knew what they meant. So we jumped back in the trucks and they locked us in. Of course, we had to all the buckets on the stove as the train moved away, grasping, jumping side to side and jerking. But we didn't spill much, I must be honest about it. And then, as the train gathered speed, they couldn't tell whether it was poison or not, because of the movement of it, you see. So anyway, one of the lads got all this couple of cubes of this tea we got, you know, lumps. And finished them up, put them in the bucket. And, of course, when it changed in colour, like, we drank it. It was bloody horrible. But it was hot. Then we all took a careful sip of the vodka. Everybody got a little sip of vodka. We made sure it went round to us all. We all got one little sip of vodka and it went all right. Nobody refused, unfortunately. And of course, the train stopped 3 or 4 times during that journey, like might have been a day in between each stop, might have been a day and a half, I don't know. But every time we stopped somehow, we always used to catch to the windward of this here latrine job, you know. Oof. Never couldn't get the opposite way, let them have it, you know. But we didn't get any more vodka or ice or anything like that. We just got the milk kit to fill up with Craig Wasser again and a few more bits and pieces of wood, like, you know, and I told him, we had to keep straw away for it to go because it was over-catching. We did arrive at our destination eventually, one night. And you see, what can I say? The doors were open one by one, like, you know, so you could hear them slide them open. We couldn't hear them at first, obviously, we just stopped for job down and the end trucks were a hell of a long way from us. So, we can hear these chaps in the gate out and then these froggies talking like, we knew what French was like. And they were getting moved into this here hut that was up that we saw when Howard was on. However, it seemed that they were all, what's the word we use, interviewed kind of thing, you know, before they were put into a warehouse just on the back of the hall there, the grand big building, the lights on. That was the one they went into. We went into one on the right later on, after our interview or interrogation, if you like, call it. But you see, we had to wait because they couldn't find any English speaking officers at that particular time. Eventually, they got a couple and they interviewed us a little bit, like, you know. And then they took us into this other room as they were expecting us to meet. So many Englishmen and so many French. And when we got in this here room, you know, we were given each a bowl of hot soup again and a piece of this bread. But it wasn't curled up and in sacks. It was like as though it had not been long baked. It was all right, you know, didn't need the soaking or whatever. And we enjoyed that bit because, you know, it was welcome. And we had one or two cigars left, one thing or another, so we had a puff or two, and they posted a couple of armed guards on the door. Not allowed out, we stopped in here, you know, all that kind of thing, so we never bothered. We stopped in. And then eventually got our heads down, went to sleep. And the following morning, it was a different kettle of fish altogether. It were great. We get up in the morning, first job, come up with these bloody great big trucks, and in these trucks were like big, great big cauldrons, you know, and well, they had in the field kitchens, of course, hot coffee, just hot coffee. But it were pretty decent stuff, better than this Jerry Hertz house we had, or whatever it was called. And we had a good sup of this. And then we were lined up separate away for a French. We were taken off first. Two guards in front, one behind. And we were marched to this here big building. It was a bathhouse and delousing centre. And I'll never forget, it was such a scream on the quiet, believe you me. There was us there in this fireplace, like, and these are your big, have you seen these old big Irish type washerwoman, big fat, got big bloody bonnets on, clogs on, and somewhere, youngish, you know, listeners were stripping off. Anyway, suddenly dawned on us, they were used to it, they weren't bothered, you know. So we stripped everything off and they put them in these here like great big bats, black up, big things, and on rails. And these rails were pulled out and then they pushed these rails back and shut these doors up, screwed them up tight, and then pressed a few switches and the earth grew on, you know. And they must have got hotter and hotter because it did get warm in that place and we were stood there about when I'm done. Well, look at people, you know. These here lassies were laughing at us. What are they laughing at? And then when we marched through into another place, well, not marched, we were led into by a couple of women, like, you know, and there was a couple of women behind, they kept tapping our asses, you know. And then as we went into this place, it was a shower room and there were about 20 bloody showers all in the line. So we did walk through that and we got some type of soap or other and soap ourselves down and give ourselves a damn good do and put the arms in all over the place. And then we took the plunge into this water. Gosh, was it cold water. If they weren't blue before, they were blue when I come out, I'm telling you. Look at my two little blue marbles. Oof. And when we got out, we went into some hot water. Well, not hot, reasonably hot, under another type of shower kind of thing, you know. And it was very hot. And then we got these here rough like sack towels to rub ourselves with, which we did. And then as we got started getting wound up and that, these here women come back in, they were touching us where they shouldn't, and playing around and laughing like ladies at us. And, well, we didn't know what the hell was going on proper, we didn't know what to do, what to say. We just felt a little bit embarrassed, to be honest with you. And after that they came round, the same women, they came round with some these here long john underpants. Very, very thin cotton stuff it was. Vest and underpants we got. We all got them. They seemed to be pretty new because they were folded up neatly and clean. And didn't look as though they'd worn before. So we put them on like, you know. And there were some a bit tight, some a bit too bloody long. We were swapping and doing all sorts. Eventually, after waiting about 10 minutes, we got more or less our clothes chucked back at us, you know. We just took them out and chucked them at us and said, sort yourselves out kind of thing, you know. Well, what bits of clothes they were, I mind you, I had notes on my feet because I had these rags on and these here bits of wood. So, I got these here like, canvas shoes. They give me them to wear. Really cold, walk through snow, I'll tell you. And I thought to myself, these feet, I wish the hell I'd have had these on before because they were nice and comfortable, you know. And we went back to our billets. As soon as we got back to our billets, there was three British officers there. And they had Union Jacks on their shoulder straps, you know. And one on the left breast pocket, you know. And they went in. And these here had a great baskets with them, you know. As we went in to give us a bar of chocolate, a bar of soap, what the hell soap, what were we just there about? Bar of chocolate, bar of soap, and asked us to go further in the room. We went further in the room, and there were piles of new uniforms, you know. So, said, take them off, put these up, get what fit your cap. And we were asking all kinds of questions, where the hell did you come from, like, and they were saying to us, had a good journey. How what's it been like, and all this crap, you know. And we'll soon sort you out, lads, we'll soon sort you out. Honestly, I'll tell you what, it was like walking into heaven, because we'd been that way out all the way through, and then we got these here fellas, and they come and they give us this chocolate, would you believe it? And then we got this bear of soap and peace, and then we got these fresh clothing and battle dress, and, you know, no badges of that, just plain battle. Our own shirts, our own, so we took this here underclothes off, and we folded them up and put them nice and straight for which we'd give them back eventually. Sat down, they put these trestle tables up, and we got a type of like some worm milk, and I had to laugh now, worm milk and some white bread, little cobs of bread, you know. We didn't know then, but they brought them off the ship with them, you see. Because we suddenly found out we were in Odessa. Said, where were we? Like, this is what they call Odessa. Who's like a seaport, you know. Said, now, we'll be a couple of days here, lads. We said, you can't board the ship until the Russians give you permission and they've vetted you properly. But in the meantime, you'll be free to wander, provided the Russians allow it and they give you your passes. You can't go out without passes. So, of course, the French were on their own, and we'd give a damn about them in any case. We were just glad to get rid of them for a bit. And there were about 20 odd of us, you know. And we felt a lot better in these here. Fresh clothes on, like, you know. They didn't fit exactly, but they weren't so bad. And we didn't have gaiters or putties with this. But we got socks, and there were boots there as well to wear. Consequently, when I first exaggerated, I was a pair of boots, good decent pair of boots, you know. I got a pair that fit me, they were all right, like. But you know what, I'm always all right. I bet pinch your feet, but still, it were worth it. And we waited and asked it around a bit. Oh, by the way, we did get a box of cigarettes apiece, I know, 50 cigarettes in a round tin. You could have Woodbines, Players, or Capstan. I got Capstan myself, actually. And there was a couple of boxes of matches knocking around like, you know. But no money is then, as yet then, like. So I said, now, facing these two Russian squaddies, I'm wondering what next. One of the soldiers said something to the other, and took hold of the horse's bridle and slipped it through his arm. And he raised his automatic submachine gun towards me, and the other searched me, and the bag I was carrying. Then he happened to put his hand into my top pocket of my battle blouse, which I still had and wore on occasion. Well, I'm just now going to take that with me. And I had it on. And he took out the wrapper from a Coleman's mustard tin. And there, of course, was the Union Jack flag printed on it, wasn't it? It always is, like a John Bull thing. And he stepped back, and he took out a newspaper from his pocket and looked at it. And there on the top of the picture, with the Russian and the Union Jack together. And he said to his mate something, and I heard the name, Harry Channel. Except with a horror story's gone. I'll be beside your life, I'll tell you. And it was smile at me and repeated that magical word, Anjanada. And they put their arm around me, kissed me on both cheeks. I couldn't understand a word of what they were saying. They put their arms around my waist and together with the horse went towards some buildings that had been shelled or something. Parts of the roof were missing and the great holes inside. As you know, I went through one of these holes anyway, the walls. And one of the chaps gave the horse a slap on the rump and off he went, trotted off, and I never see it again. I mean, some barn or other must have done. And anyway, as we walk around the corner of this here building, through this hole and around the corner, we stood right in front of a Russian tank. Of course, the two soldiers shouted something, and then, you know, on top of the tank, turret, the lid opened, and out popped another Russian. I could tell it was a higher ranking soldier because the two saluted and then said something else. A Russian from the tank climbed down and I noticed it was a woman. Wasn't she smiling? She threw her arms around me and kissed me, murmuring, "Oh, I'm Richard, I'm Richard, Tavarich." No. There was a cracking on the tank radio, so another had popped up from the tank and said something else in Russian. And round the corner, into the open, about a score of these here white-clad soldiers came trotting round, and two of them waved to me, so they must have been the two that got hold of me, you know, in the first place. And off they went. Anyway, our way back to these here Russian, obviously, and then the woman kissed me again, pushed me into a room and said something, and waved her hand, and she shut the door behind her. And she wrote in chalk in big letters on the door, "Angry Jana." Now, this is what I found later, when the door was opened and about 67 more of her lads were ushered in. It seemed that the Russian advance—the Russian advance was so fast that the German guards were caught unawares and fled, leaving the lads themselves. The Russians had spotted them and brought them. Later that night, we heard tanks again, four of them, this time. And we heard such an almighty noise, they were firing away like nobody's business. after a while, of course, they stopped. Of course, this created a deathly silence. And then we heard these here women laughing. So, they were the tank drivers, of course. They entered the room where we were. You know, where we'd told to stay. And they lit some lamps and brought some hot soup and bread. Now, of course, the bread had to be soaked and then placed on the stove that was in the middle of the room. It was not bad, just a nice and warm. And that softened the bread, you see, because it was like curled up like a crisp or something, you know, in sacks. They had this bread in sacks, and he said, "Take a couple of pieces out and soak it. Stop them so it could be eaten." And then suddenly from nowhere we heard this melodeon and the women get away and they're looking at us, and then they grabbed us and started dancing up and down, and then we were given vodka and a kind of bacon fat with cheese. I didn't like it. But the vodka went down all right. Matter of fact, it went down doesn't do well, because I must say, to be honest, I woke up the next morning with a bit of a thick head, but not too bad. I was in a small room. I was lying on a mattress. Beside me, well, on top of me, there was a woman with her arms and legs over mine. My slacks were off, and she'd nothing underneath. Well, you can know, I don't know. I did now feel peculiar, embarrassed, and what have you. I could only surmise that the Russian army officer and tank driver, well, I think that she must have been satisfied, because we spent that day smoking cigars and drinking vodka and dancing. But believe me, that night I was aware of everything that went on, because well, I watched how much I drunk, you see, and kept myself pretty sober. I thought I wasn't going to miss out this time, or not on this experience. And I think I managed quite well, because the next morning, before she went off to see a woman, kissed me, and she gave me an O in Russian, like, you know, and a big, pretty big box of cigars, yeah, all right, you know. I lost the note somewhere, but lost it later on. I don't know where the hell I lost it, but I lost it. And about an hour after they'd gone, we were lined up outside the Eva Code. And we were given an escort to the next village, maybe 4 or 5 miles away. Then, of course, we were interviewed by a couple of Russian officers, both speaking very good English. Our particulars were taken, like name, rank, number, along with the jellies, where we were sent to work, and what part of England did we come from, and half hour where London got Manchester, roughly, and what river was run through London, and it was our favourite football team, all this kind of crap and nonsense. Anyway, I think we must have satisfied him, because nobody was held back or anything like that. And then we were told we had to stay there too, because they hadn't quite cleared the road, and there were pockets of jerrys here and there, and there was an air raid later on that day, so they shouted for us to get left out with the ball for gun channel, like taking ammunition to them and all this crap. And I thought they'd have had it ready, but they, I don't know, they didn't seem to have it ready. Taking these here shells off this wagon, and they were clipped ready, and then darting up to the Beaufort gun fellas and giving them these here bloody clips. Anyway, it lasted about 20 minutes, we weren't so bad, so we see planes in the sky, but they never seemed to come anywhere near, really. And then after that, of course, some more of our lads turned up. Where the hell they come from, God knows. And then the French turned up. There were hundreds of them, here, there, and every bloody way. They turned up with every nick and corner you could find. There were French there, French ex-prisoners of war. They really got our nerves with their shouting, soup, soup, they wanted soup, they were hungry, all this other all the bloody day. Ran off, you know, I'll tell you. Now, eventually, we got the order to move to the next zone. You see, the country with that district was divided into zones. The commander in each zone, and no one could enter without their permission. Sometimes it would be very frustrating, because after tramping half a day, down the village through the snow and the ice, and that, you know, the necessary papers wouldn't be satisfactory or something like that, not quite right. They'd have to go all the way back. Or maybe take a different route. And all the way we had these Iran guards all the time. They would change up to what like we did when we first were captured, you know. I thought, bloody prisoners of war again. Anyway. Sometimes we picked up lost children on the way, and women as well, who would attach themselves to us for protection and food. Well, we got into the Polish corridor after a bit, after a day or so, and the march got really terrible. Snow falling, no proper food or water, frostbite here and there on people, and not being able to have a decent wash or relieve ourselves in a decent manner. One particular we were each stood in two lines in a field. Well, I think it was all snow open, but they didn't have a field of hell you were on. About 2 yards apart, stripped down with nothing on you. They were coward, I'm telling you. There were some blue willies and what have you. I'll tell you, talk about brass monkeys. Clothes put in front of us, I don't know how these men went on. They were also, their breasts were, nipples were blue as a roof. Because they were also naked as well. Stood, might be stood next to us, you know, if they were there, they had to be stripped off. And the kids. And it didn't matter about that, they had to be stripped off. And all our stuff was searched thoroughly, believe me, it was searched and all. And then, about an hour after, same again, further on. We thought, what the hell's going on? Then we got an apology. They thought that we were German prisoners. And someone had made a mistake. So, of course, to make up that night, we entered a large warehouse. We were given some good old beef soup and bread. Now, that was very good and very hot and was welcome. We all got in. A lot of them, which we wanted. Of course, we got blown up on one thing and another, but still, we got it. We had it. We enjoyed it. And we put in this here room, which was ready for us. Another great big warehouse, you know, out here. And piles of straw here and there, so we took to get all this straw and shake it down and sleep on it. But no smoking. Of course, we could step outside and smoke. And of course, I did this once, but bang. Gosh, you were that bloody cold, I thought of this. I'd rather be without. And I went back in. Now, another thing was, if you weren't careful, your personal belongings would disappear. If you went out for a pickle or something like that, you come back, you'd have to find your stuff gone. All these Frenchmen there, you know, a lot more British than anybody else. Sometimes at night, during walking through that locker, we'd be in some place where the beer was falling, there's so many in one room coming in and so on and so forth, and all the houses in that roundabout were empty, so we went in them for need. For warmth more than anything else, we had to do, even with cold. And the Russians used to come and shine their torches in the room and fire at the ceiling, and then taking what they wanted, especially our boots, they said, "We're going to the front. You're going home. We need the boots more than you." This was interpreted anyway, as far as we could understand. So what are we to do? Get some wood and cloths and wrap them around the feet best we could to stop them getting frostbite and wet through. Well, mainly they get wet, and in any case, we snow that, you know, walking. And then sometimes at night we'd have women sleeping with us. Oh, they'd have about 5 or 6 bloody knickers on for warmth and protection, but they didn't need to fear us because we never gave it a thought in those conditions anyway. We were too weak and knackered. After struggling through snow and ice and helping them and the kids as well, also, remember this, that if we wanted something to eat, Russians would say to us, "You're free,
Get whatever you want. Don't ask us. Just help yourselves, what you see.
Why, if there be a cow wandering about, or a pig or something like that loose, grunting around, he'd get his gun and shoot the damn thing and say, hey, how you got? Well, it was all right, but, I mean, there was no salt, no facilities for cooking, no facilities for curing it or anything. But we did the best we could. Now for fuel, we get a few doors that might have been hanging off, or a few window frames, and a few of the Jerry's clothing, and make a fire with that lot. Get some snow in a bucket to melt it, so that we can make a drink, especially for kids, because they need it. My word, the poor little devils. You see, we'd sent them, or left them at the nearest habitat we could, where there were people, so that they could look after them. And we left them with them, wherever, and mind you, on the way again, we picked more up and so on and so forth, and this is how they were, because, honestly, everything was in sixes and sevens.